Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding
Welcome
all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Both of us live in studio on this gorgeous Monday. Darren, how you doing?
I am doing much better than I thought I'd be. Today, right now.
Good.
There's a look, man. Let me tell you something. You know, we've been talking about my little journey I got going on. You might be impressed come the 14th when I weigh myself.
7 days?
7 days from now.
I will be impressed. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Because from where I started to where I am now, I kind of cheated. You know, I was doing some laundry before, since I'm leaving on Wednesday. Well, you're leaving Wednesday too, so. And I saw a scale in my bathroom downstairs. Let me, you know, since I'm washing clothes, let me go strip down. Got on the thing. I said, okay. I see you, big boy. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, we may be the same weight when I come back from Colorado after
that
all the food.
Possibly true. That is possibly true. Hey, you know, it's interesting because I was looking at the weather up there. It's calling for rain up there. I think Thursday's going to be fine, but like Friday, Saturday.
We're at?
Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, hopefully she gets a PR. She gets a PR. I'll be back in Oregon in a couple of weeks or whatever for the Olympic trial. So we'll see what happens there. But
I got 73 and sunny in Copper Mountain. Sounds nice, right?
Yeah. Not as good.
So
as,
I can swing that.
Not as good as here or like it was in Jacksonville.
I can deal with this 85 all day long.
Yeah. But no. I mean, the weather's good, man. I mean, I'm feeling good. Look, man, I felt a certain kind of way when I bought my plane ticket to go to Oregon because it was like, man, that's a lot of money. And it is for a good purpose, a good reason, but still, it's still a lot of money. But now that I'm getting closer to knowing that I'm going to be going up there Wednesday, I'm a little excited. Never been to Oregon before, so it's cool. I'm interested to go up there and I guess take a tour of Nike Town or what have you. We'll probably do that on Friday and, you know, just have a good time, I guess.
Good. Sounds fun.
Yeah, sounds expensive, but
it will be expensive, but it'll be worth it. You're making memories, okay? You're making memories with your kid.
Still.
Right? Come on, think of it that way. Think of it as making memories with your kid.
Hey man, let me tell you something. When I told her I was coming up, she was like, "I wasn't tripping if you wasn't." I was like, "Why you tell me after I had already spent $500 for a ticket? Like I could have just waited 2 weeks from now." But it's all good, you know. It could, you know. Could be worse.
You'll have fun. You'll have fun.
Not really, because I still won't be able to eat like I want to.
Yeah, but it's Oregon. What are you going to eat up there anyways? It's all vegetarian, you see?
I don't know. I ain't ever been there.
That's my point. It'll be fun. You get to experience it.
No, I'll probably just still, you know, eat some grilled or whatever up there.
So. Yeah, they don't have, like, it's not barbecue up there.
No. I'm saying because I
grilled eggplant.
No, I think the hotel we're staying at has a grill. So I'll be able to, you know, I can throw something on there.
Fish.
I don't eat seafood.
I know you don't, but you should. I had shrimp last night. It's good.
I'm allergic to it. So why would I eat something I'm allergic to?
Is it like, was it Hitch? Will Smith and Hitch?
Yeah.
And you got to take all the Benadryl?
Yeah. So I would just rather avoid that.
That's a good movie.
It's a classic.
Yeah, great movie.
Will Smith, Eva Mendes.
I love Will Smith. He's awesome.
I even like the Wild Wild West.
The Wild Wild West.
That's Kumo D. I'm talking about the movie.
No, I know, but Will Smith does a version in it. Come on now.
It's not that one. That's Kumo D. That's old school.
Well, he takes the sample from Kumo D and puts in there. Come on now.
I thought that was Cisco.
No, that's the thong song.
I thought he did
Look
something.
Look at that girl, so scandalous.
I know
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it's Cisco with the blonde hair.
No, I'm saying I thought Cisco did a track on the Wild Wild West, but
he might have too. But
all that being said, no, I'm doing okay. You know, obviously we're not doing as good as maybe the Tennessee Titans are this weekend.
Yeah,
you know, today, you know, after signing or trading for Julio Jones, on yesterday, which that news broke during the show yesterday because we were talking about in my first hour on, you know, the overtures that Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Tyreek Hill were making about trying to go after Julio Jones. And then in the second hour, it broke. Diana Rossini from ESPN broke the news that they were going to trade him for a second-round draft pick and I think a fifth-round draft pick for next year to the Tennessee Titans. Now, I'm not going to lie. It didn't really impress me. I saw somebody on Twitter yesterday trying to make some statistical comparisons between Ryan Tannehill and Patrick Mahomes after so many games. I'm like, whatever, dude. I mean, at the end of the day, it improves their offense, I guess, because you're adding a Hall of Fame player there. But I still don't think it takes them over the edge of Kansas City, because defensively they're going to have a lot of question marks there. And then you're just not going to turn into literally what Keyshawn Johnson was talking about before we came on the air. You're not going to turn into some wide open team because you got Derrick Henry in the background.
And they should become a wide open team, but they won't. They won't listen to statistics or to actual numbers.
Or to you.
No, but the defense will be a thing holding the back. I likened them the other day to, not to the same extent, but they have the same feel as the 2018 Chiefs, where phenomenal offense, they have all these weapons, but defensively, that's really going to hold them back, especially the secondary. Their secondary was burnt toast last year.
Yeah, and they made some adjustments because obviously Malcolm Butler's not there anymore.
Sure, they've done a little bit, but I don't see them going from, I think they were 29th or 30th ranked secondary to all of a sudden being 15th or middle of the pack. I don't see that happening.
And I still question, because while I like Derrick Henry, and you know how I feel about their running attack. I know people are praising AJ Brown like he's the next up and comer, and he probably will be. I think Julio becomes the number one option on the team, as a wide receiver. I think by him being there, it will elevate AJ Brown. I think it'll make him play better. I'm just not. Maybe it's just me, and I know we've had this conversation over the last couple of years, but I'm just not a real big believer in Ryan Tannehill. I mean, now to me, they were good. But obviously, I think Derrick Henry rush for almost 2,000 yards last year.
I don't know if that was last year or the year before.
But he led the league in rush. But what I'm saying is that knowing that you're going to have to run the ball with him. Granted, it should alleviate and it should make the play calling a little bit easier, because you don't want to double Julio. You may try to get away with doubling AJ just to see what he's able to do. But if you're put like this, if Derrick Henry can get you 4, 5, 6 yards on that first down, it will make the offense much, much easier to be able to call plays, to where you gotta have more of a balanced defensive attack, going up against him. So in that manner, I like it. I don't know what their offensive line looks like right now, because I don't study their offensive line. But with Julio will make the play calling a little bit more interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, and I'm with you. If they can get 5, 6 yards on first down, that'll be a huge help for them. I do think this should. Ryan Tannehill has been quietly extremely good since he's taken over.
Like, I know you like him.
If you look at what the big difference was from Marcus Mariota, the previous quarterbacks to him,
night and day.
It's night and day. Night and day. Even Derrick Henry's numbers have been night and day, because they actually have the ability to not stack the box. And this is another addition to not being able to stack the box. So this will be good for Derrick Henry. He did go over 2,000 yards last year.
Okay.
He gets more carries than anyone in the league. I mean, he had 300 and no,
but you, yeah, you know, but to that point though, if you got Derrick Henry, you should be running the ball, because if nothing else, it does keeps the other team's offense on the sidelines, because you can run the ball, set up the play action pass, and you can eat away that clock. I will say this though, to your point, Sheldon, I think with the addition of Julio, I think more pressure now is on Ryan Tannehill, because now you really have no excuse. I think it's more pressure on him and more pressure on that offensive line to make sure that you don't get Tannehill sacked or anything like that, because now you've got three wide receivers, you got a running back, you got an offense. I mean, you have an offense that should, in theory, be able to go score for score with people.
Yeah, and they have a pretty good offensive line. Ben Jones – He's been a veteran for a long time. Taylor Llewellyn, or L-E-W-A-N, Llewellyn, whatever his name is, he's been a Pro Bowl before. They have some decent guys on that offensive line. Again, I don't think their offense is going to be an issue. It's, again, reminds me of the 2018 Chiefs. Not the same because I get it. Patrick Mahomes, next level. They don't have Travis Kelce. I understand. I think the comparison, though, is fair as far as offense is going to be fine, but that defense has so many question marks. I don't even know if they win the, AFC South? I think the Colts can still win that. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have the Texans and the Jags. That's, four easy wins right there?
I would give it to Tennessee on that, just based because you'll have more questions on Carson Wentz in that offense than you will Ryan Tannehill. And if you like Tannehill as much as you have done over the last 2 years,
I do.
You have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he can make things happen with Julio. Julio does nothing but strengthen their offense.
Yeah,
and so even if you compare him to 2018 Chiefs, that team still went, I think, 12-4.
Oh yeah.
So if we're giving them that, then I'd say go for it. Now obviously we circle the date of October 24th now, because that's when Kansas City travels down to take on the Tennessee Titans in Nashville. So
it will be very interesting to see. It's going to take them a few games to get everything down, but yeah, AJ Brown and Julio, and then Josh Reynolds to an extent. He's a very good slot receiver who they got from the Rams this year. That's a good. Good core that they have.
Another good thing about Julio is that he can play in the slot as well. So that's the beauty when you have players that can play all those positions. You don't know where they're going to line up. So that's a good thing for the offensive coordinator to be able to, do a little bit of trickery if you want to.
The reason why, and people were asking, why didn't the Kansas City Chiefs make a better offer or match this offer? So it's basically a second rounder. And then a fourth rounder with the Falcons getting a sixth, or the Titans getting a sixth rounder. So,
well, here's the thing. I don't even know if we, I don't even think Kansas City made an offer.
I think they did, because you know the reason why? They went after Juju Smith-Schuster. They went after T.Y. Hilton. I just wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying they made a strong offer, definitely called.
I'm with you. It's just hard for me to think that. You would, because if your players are out there like that.
They wanted him.
Yeah. Now, we didn't hear Patrick would have said he wanted it. It's probably done. But to your point, I'm with you that I think it would they did their due diligence in probably calling to see. But if hell, New England got Mohamed Sanu for a second rounder. I mean, to me, if I'm – look. I wouldn't have mind giving up a one. I'd have given up a one for Julio for next year, because you're going to be picking 29, 30, 31, 32 anyway. So, I'd give that, I would do that in a heartbeat. But that's just me.
I'm 100% with you. The only thing is they would have had to give up a second and a fourth and not get anything back. Or they would have had to give up a second and a third because their picks are later than Tennessee. So it's not – they would have had to give up more. And I think the biggest issue – I don't 100% understand it. It has to do with the salary cap. So the Chiefs have the salary cap in the future to make it happen, but they didn't have the cash on hand. It was the same reason why the Raiders couldn't give Khalil Mack an extension and why they had to trade Khalil Mack. They didn't have the cash on hand to make a deal happen. Apparently, there's some rumors that was the reason with the Chiefs not being able to make this deal happen. Even if they wanted Julio Jones, they couldn't based on the cash at hand.
I think that all stemmed from the fact that they hadn't done something with Tyrann Mathieu.
Tyrann Mathieu, yeah, that was part of it. It was Tyrann Mathieu, and I think maybe this had to do with Tyreek Hill not restructuring his deal. I don't know. I'm not a cap guy.
Yeah, not the Tyreek thing. I think that would have been in hindsight, because that was 2 months ago versus
It was hindsight. Hindsight, but that could have played into if that would have gotten restructured. Maybe this could have gotten done. I don't know. But these are just possibilities. This is just what I've heard, the rumblings from guys on Twitter. And there were some big-name national media guys that said it was the cash-on-hand issue was why Kansas City couldn't get a deal done. So,
Couldn't they have done something if they would have? Because they could have, quote-unquote, done a sign, not a sign trade, but they could have signed him, or they could have traded for him, reworked his contract, and then
maybe. But at the same token, I think Kansas City probably didn't want to give up a second and a third, or a second and a fourth, and not got a draft pick back in return when the asking was just a second. 100% do it in a heartbeat. Second and a fifth, do it. But once you start getting into like the thirds and additional fourths, eventually Kansas City is going to need to supplement their high draft picks, their high-paid players, with solid talent. They're going to have to eventually. We've seen it this year. We're going to need guys like Creed Humphrey, Nick Bolton, to eventually step up. Billy Gay Jr. is going to need to step up.
Here's the thing, though, and even the mayor, Sly James, said it on yesterday, and I think you said it before. When you got all those assets on the offensive line, you got something to bargain with as you get closer to the start of the season. Training camp and stuff like that.
But you're maybe looking at a sixth-round guy for, like, Andrew Wiley. You may be looking at a...
I think you can get more for him.
You can't get more for these guys. I think he was undrafted from Cleveland. He was a seventh-round. Like, Austin Blythe, he signed a one-year, $1.5 million contract? He could get cut.
Was it that low?
Yeah. He could get cut, and I wouldn't be surprised. Like, these guys...
You would want that.
The only... No. I think he's very fine. I think he's I want Creed Humphrey to start. I would enjoy Creed Humphrey starting.
That's what I'm
saying.
I don't wish him
to get cut. I think he's a very valuable player, a very good veteran backup, solid veteran backup. But the Chiefs don't have like as much offensive line depth as they have. They don't have any guys. They're not getting rid of the high guys. They're not getting rid of Joe Tooney. They're not getting rid of Brown. They're not getting rid of Creed. So the only guys they have.
Smith.
The only guys they would get rid of are probably bringing you back a sixth-rounder or so in return. The Martinez Rankins, the Andrew Wileys. LDT, I don't know if he has any trade value based on his contract.
I don't know, but if
Nick Allegretti.
But if you're Brett Veach and you can find a Trey Smith in the sixth round, anything is possible. I mean, you can do some things still.
No, I agree.
That's all I'm saying on that. At the end of the day, I'm pretty sure, knowing Brett Veach, he did his due diligence. If they could have made it work, I have no doubt in my mind that they would have got him.
That's the only thing is they went after Juju. They went after T.Y. Hilton. They went after all these guys. It would be weird if they didn't at least make an attempt on Julio. I don't know what they do now.
Had they known, like post-Super Bowl, that Julio was available, I don't think they – I think outside of Orlando Brown, maybe the Trent Williams thing or whatever, I think that they would have set their sights on him quietly – to try to get him instead of trying to do all this stuff with, because to me Juju, he's a glorified number two.
Which is fine though. They need a glorified number two.
But what I'm saying is that if you hear rumblings that Julio is available, that's where you put your eggs at.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Versus because Julio, he ain't a glory. I mean, you literally have three number ones on your squad. You'd have him, Tyreek, Kelce. That's three number one wide receivers or three number one players on your, because that's 1A, 1AB, between he and Tyreek, and then you got 1A in Kelce.
To the same extent, I'm not heartbroken. The reason why Kansas City is still the front runner in the AFC, with or without Julio, they're still the team to beat in the AFC. They are still going to have the most explosive offense. At the end of the day, there's only one football. Does it help Patrick? Yes. Will it help set records? Yes. Whether you win by six, whether you win by 13, a win's a win. I think that maybe we got too excited in the what could have been as far as what the Chiefs need. The one deal that actually makes me more sad than not getting Julio, that's letting Bashaud Breeland go for $4 million. Up to $4 million. It's a one-year, up to $4 million contract with Minnesota. And I don't necessarily understand this because we knew Bashaud wasn't asking for a lot. I even said if he wanted 2 for $16, I would have done that deal with him. It's just when you even break it down farther, you have to take this deal separately, but because they're so intertwined, what it basically came down to was the Chiefs got Mike Hughes, a seventh rounder, and $2 million of cap relief, and the Vikings got a sixth rounder and Bashaud Breeland. When you break it down like that, I know the deals aren't together, but they're intertwined based on who the players are, how the draft picks were set up. No one of the right mind is making that deal.
I'm just of the belief that Chiefs didn't want Bashaud Breeland back.
That obviously, that has to be it, because 1 year, $4 million for a, I like to slot Bashad, cornerback 30 to 35 ish.
Well, and, let, and I'm sorry, let me say this. Not only that, they obviously have a lot of belief in Tre'Davious Woodland and Lajarius Sneed.
And I think DeAndre Baker.
And DeAndre Baker, yeah. And he was a former first round pick, so yeah, he, you know, trying to see what they can get with what they paid for him, get the most value out of that as well.
They didn't get pay much for Baker,
and that's my point.
The thing with that's a very good point. But the thing with Baker is they obviously have a lot of faith in him. I do too, but he's coming off of a broken femur in week 17. Huge, man.
It's June. His leg is healed, man.
But that's a pretty significant injury. This is not like a sprained ankle.
A broken leg is different than like an ACL. I mean, if it's ACL, still
a big deal.
But let's not forget, T.O. came back in the Super Bowl 7 weeks after a broken leg.
But he's also a Hall of Famer.
That's true. But what I'm saying is that happened December, January, whatever. It's June. The leg is healed. I'm pretty sure he's back there with the team. He's in shape. I'm not. If it was ACL, I would get you. But because it's just a broken leg, he's had months to heal, recover, get back in shape. So I'm not downplaying what you say. I'm just saying that if it was a tear or something like that versus a broken bone that heals, six to 8 weeks. I would give you that. If it was like in the middle of the season,
sure,
and you're coming back, that I could understand. But off season, you ain't got nothing but time.
The only thing we've been hearing is Tre'Davious Ward's on one side. That's a lock. He's a lock at one outside corner spot. They want Lajarius to be slot because that allows him to be a playmaker. We saw how good he was in the slot. We saw how good he was as a playmaker. They want to leave him there. I'm all for that. They've been trying Rashad Finch on the outside. I'm not a huge fan of that. He doesn't have the speed to keep up with a lot of those outside wide receivers. I would feel a lot more comfortable if it was Bashad there. You have DeAndre Baker filling in here and there, and then you also have Rashad Fenton as an as-need basis. And then whatever happens to Mike Hughes, if he blossoms, great. If he doesn't, no harm, no foul. This leaves you very, I think, thin at cornerback. Like, this, don't get me wrong.
They got like 5-6 players. I don't know how
they
really
but they
thin.
Do. But guess what? They're all very high potential guys. All very low floor guys. Mike Hughes got Minnesota basically said, take him. Take Mike Hughes. DeAndre Baker, sure. But I get it. If he didn't have his legal issues, he would still be starting on the Giants. We can say that. But he is coming off a broken leg in week 17. Rashad Fenton's a sixth rounder. We haven't seen much. Doesn't have top end speed. I'm just saying, you had Bashad Breeland put everyone down one spot. This is a very good cornerback room.
Let us not forget this, because Brett Veach told me this when I asked him about, Antonio Brown or going after. This is right before they signed or traded for Orlando Brown. I asked him specifically about, wide receivers and bringing veterans in. I mean, as he said, you got the summer, you got training camp, you got post-training. I mean, there are still, teams are constantly making moves. I don't want to make it seem like because we didn't, because they didn't re-sign Rashad Breeland that our defensive backfield is going to be bare or the cover is going to be bare. He's gotten enough goodwill from me that I'll let the process play itself out. And then, the other thing too, and I've said it before, both Patrick as well as Tyron, you're both all pros. Let's see, especially Tyron, because you want a new contract. Let's see you elevate that defensive backfield and get it up to Pro Bowl, all pro level.
I think they have, though. I mean, you're talking Tre'Davious, undrafted guy. You're talking Rashad Fenton, sixth rounder. You're talking Lajarius Sneed, fourth rounder. I mean, it's not like those were high draft picks, and that's according to what we've seen so far.
But you just said that you don't believe in Rashad Fenton, so you can't.
That's my point, though. I don't believe. I mean, I think he's a useful cornerback in spurts. I don't want him being a starter. That's all I'm saying. I think he's a very valuable piece. We saw him. He lined up against tight ends in the Super Bowl. He was fine. He's a bigger bodied guy, but I don't trust him not getting
burnt. But look, let's not forget that this team is not going to be dependent upon that defensive back. It's going to be dependent on Patrick and his arm.
100%.
Keeping Patrick safe. And then, obviously, our scoring. But, obviously, your big money guys are up front. So, I mean, you know, you expect them to get the push, get after the quarterback, kind of make some, you know, make some things happen. You got Tyrann Mathews in the backfield that's going to come up try to make plays. Now, what you just want your, you know, you want your corners, obviously don't get burnt, but you know,
that's
but all but,
I want.
But if nothing else, keep the man in front of you. If you can at least keep the man in front of you and don't do any dumb silly penalties, I mean, the team will be, hey, look, those players will be okay. I think, again, Rashad Brevin, you know, look, and let's call it what it is, man. You know, like you said, he has some legal issues, but also, I mean, you know, Rashad signed a contract or signed a contract with Minnesota Vikings on Friday and was in St. Joe for a rap concert, you know, performance. So, I mean, you know, is this not to say that other players don't have other hobbies and stuff like that, but is his mind really on football right now in the middle of OTAs and all this other stuff?
Sure. That's fair. But yeah. I let the performance speak for itself, and I liked what Bashad brought. End of the day, the Chiefs have been to two back-to-back Super Bowls. They obviously know what they're doing. Spags said in his press conference he wants to let the kids play, which to me sounds like a rebuilding. That's something like a 4-12 team says, let the kids play, not a team coming off back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. But at the end of the day, we have to trust these guys. They've shown success. Spags, I think, had the final decision here. I think Spags was the one that said, I like what we have with the young group, which means he's probably enamored with DeAndre Baker. I'm a little cautious.
But again,
cautious.
But again, I ask you, like Brett Veach, do they not have enough goodwill?
No, they do. But of course they do. But they've also made mistakes. I mean, Breland speaks second rounder. There you go. They've obviously made mistakes. They're not foolproof. Again, they are, in my opinion, he's the best GM in football right now. Has to be. Who else has gone to back-to-back Super Bowls the past two seasons?
I ain't gonna lie, that GM down in Tampa Bay, pretty good too.
So. Sure, he is fantastic.
He's pretty good too. I mean, you know, you signed Tom Brady and you listen to Brady.
The GM Brady, you mean?
Yeah, you listen to GM Brady, who brings in, you know, a couple of other players, teammates that he did. He's okay.
After what the Patriots did, signing Aguilar to that massive contract, I'm starting to think that Brady was the GM when he was down with New England.
At least he was a smart one.
Yeah, he was a smart one. He was the one that said, yeah. No, I'm with you. They have all the – I have all the trust in Veach and Spags, again, but I'm not going to just blindly –
I even trust Andy.
And Andy Reid. I'm just going to say I'm not going to blindly sit here and not question deals that seem –
No, at least poor. I'm not saying not question. Always question it. But I'm saying, you know, they've done enough since 2018 and to an extent 2017 that, you know, seeing the moves that have been made, we saw how bad the defense was 2018. They got rid of Sutton and then they brought in Spags and kind of rebuilt that and revamped that defense. Offensively, you won the Super Bowl. So, in essence, when you win a Super Bowl, you don't really think there's anything you need to improve on.
Sure.
Maybe some tweaks here and there, but basically with COVID, you brought 20 or 22 people back. Now you lose the Super Bowl, you say, okay, we got exposed.
And guess what they fixed?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is like Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, they won. They brought everybody back, so in essence, you really don't have to improve anything. You just, you know, want to be like a fine well-oiled machine and do the same thing. Now, they meet up again. Kansas City beats them. Now they may feel like, okay, we got to improve here to try to get back there. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk some NBA because a lot of crazy basketball happened over the weekend.
I'm up 1-0.
And guess what? We got a long series to go before you get your
Hold on, hold on. So now you said it's a long You went for five games. Now it's gonna be a long series.
No. Four more games.
Okay.
We'll talk about it on the other end of this break. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. great song, right?
Tell me, do you like what you see? Yeah.
I can always get down with Belle Biv DeVoe.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if Chad could, but, you know. Do.
All right, so NBA time now.
Talk NBA for
I thought it was a good minutes. Song to get into the NBA segment. I figured, why not a little.
I don't know Do Me Baby is actually.
Well, I don't know. Belle Biv DeVoe. Struggling. I pulled the Joe Namath right there. Let's start with the game on Saturday, the one that you and I have a bet on. Hawks took down the Sixers in game one. They were up like 26 at one point, but. That final?
No, that wasn't yesterday.
Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday. That was the Nets. That was Saturday.
Yeah, that was Saturday. That was yesterday.
Yeah, me thinking I missed something.
Damn, I thought I missed a day. We slept through it. But that finale, the fourth quarter, was absurd.
It was, because I turned away from it because they were leading by 20-some points, and I was like, well, you know,
Darren, 25 points scored between the two teams in the last minute 16. Yeah, damn. I looked it up because I was like, this seems crazy. I was counting it. I was like,
that was like 128, 124. I'm like, what the hell did I miss?
Dude, there was fouls. There was an intentional clear path foul by Embiid. There was Seth Curry getting en fuego. The entire game was just ridiculous. I think it was Bogdanovich hit that final clutch three. This game was wild. The one thing I want to say, the Hawks played about perfect.
I told you they
would. But guess what? They still almost lost. The Sixers didn't figure out how to play basketball until the last 6 minutes of the game. That last 6 minutes, they almost made up a 22-point differential.
Yeah, that's not really Atlanta's fault on that. I mean, they just started knocking down shots.
No, but I'm saying I don't think that continues for an entire series. I think they shot their wad. That was their best game.
It's only one game. Still, they ain't playing at home yet. They got home court advantage.
I think they couldn't have played better.
All they have to do is win their home game, Sterling. That's all they have to do. They have to do what Dallas couldn't do.
They didn't choke because Luka was phenomenal. We'll get to that in a second. That's a whole KP. By the way, Kristaps Porzingis is not 7'3". He's like 5'27" because that guy is shorter than Muggsy Bogues. He plays like he is a fifth grader.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
But
yeah.
No, my point with this is I think the Hawks played their perfect game, and that was barely enough. They had to have so many things go right in their perfect game. Sixers had to have so many things go wrong.
I mean, Joel Embiid didn't really play well, at least the first half. I didn't really, you know, see the second half. I'm talking about the first half. The first half, he was struggling.
That's my point. Do you think it's going to continue?
Well,
I don't.
Again, but did he come back from his injury too soon?
No, because they have so much invested in Joel Embiid. If they thought there was potential for a massive catastrophic injury.
I mean, he was a game time decision.
I get that, but I think if there was potential for catastrophic injury with Embiid, he would not be out there right now.
But here's the thing. Because he came back and it was a game time decision and now they're down 0-1, he might try to – he might feel like in his mind he needs to exert more to help this team win. And could find himself in a situation where he injures himself even more.
It wasn't even necessarily him. It was defensively. They had a poor game plan at the start. Everyone on the Hawks were hitting threes. It is what it is. Danny Green, Matisse Thybulle. I personally would have played a little bit more Matisse Thybulle just defensively because he's that good. And then Ben Simmons. They just couldn't figure it out defensively the first 3.5 quarters. And once they were like, oh, we could just do this, they turned a switch. And it was turnover after turnover after turnover. I think they realize we have the game plan now. We let them get game one. That's not going to happen again.
Don't you think Atlanta's going to make adjustments?
I think good luck.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. Like, I don't think the Sixers are the best team in the East. I think they're better than the Hawks. I think the Hawks are playing very good basketball right now. I just don't think they have the amount of talent from top to bottom that the other three teams in the East do.
Yeah, but remember what I told you, though. You know, I mean, Atlanta's a much better team than people give them credit for. And on top of that, again, coming out for the, off of that series win against the Knicks, they just have a sense of belief that they, you know, that they can, you know, they can beat anybody. And to get the first game against the Philadelphia 76ers, you don't think it's going to give them some air confidence going into a game number two tomorrow?
No, that's what I'm saying. Trae Young right now has got to be the most confident guy in the NBA right now. I get that. But they also shot 20 of 21 from the free throw line. Sixers shot 24 of 35.
Hold on. But they also shot 20 of 47 from the three-point line, too. And Philly only shot 10 of 29.
Sure, and Danny Green went 0 of 4. Like, I think there's going to be some regression to the mean is what I'm saying. I think that Atlanta's not going to shoot as great as they did, and I think the Sixers will shoot better, especially at the free throw line, than they did. That's what I think. Like, Ben Simmons, I know he's a poor free throw shooter, but 3 of 10?
Hank of Simmons. That's what you said. That's what I would
do. Sure, but
hack him. I mean, because look, I mean, seriously, I mean, I guess what, Stephen Hill or whatever is the only one that didn't really shoot well, I guess, in the starting lineup. But, I mean, Capella, 11, double-double, you know, Young, double-double. I mean, obviously, you get down to Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons and, you know, I mean – Joel, and look, and I don't want to take nothing away from Embiid. Obviously, he balled out. He almost had 40 points and almost 10 rebounds. But he didn't have help a lot of times. Like I said, it's going to be hard to beat a team when you make 10 three-point shots and they make 20. That kind of, you know, because
yeah,
they were like
huge.
I said, because they were hitting those shots early. And that was because I think I saw one time it was like 47, 20.
Like 17. It was,
25 points, I think.
Whatever it was, it was ridiculous. And the one thing I will say, Doc Rivers is not making the same mistake again. He had, at one point, Simmons, Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid on the bench at the same time. You know what happened in that whatever time it was? In the 11 minutes that George Hill played, he was negative 17. Furkan Korkmaz in 11 minutes was negative 12. Dwight Howard in 8 minutes was minus 15. He's not making this,
Dwight Howard.
But he's not making the same mistake again. I'm saying, I'm going to sit my three studs and give up 15 points in 8 minutes. Like, they didn't all play at the same time. I get that. But Doc Rivers is not making the same mistake of taking all three of his guys out and trying to ride for 5 minute stretches with Dwight Howard, Furkan Korkmaz, and George Hill.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
So I don't think that happens again. Game 7 last night between the Mavs, the Clippers, I think it was. I knew the Clippers were winning this game. Like, you had that feeling that the Clippers, once they won Game 6, it was over.
I don't know. I still have my doubt because it was real close going into the fourth quarter. I think the last time I looked at my phone, it was like 75-72 Clippers in the third quarter going into the fourth, whatever. I will say this. Let's give Ty Lue credit because we talked about, you know, what type of pressure they might be under if they were to lose a series, you know, would Steve Ballmer just blow the team up or whatever. He did a hell of a coaching job making those adjustments because every team was winning on the road, and then they come home game 7 and they're able to close them out. Now, it doesn't help when Luka's gonna do what he's gonna do, but like you said, you got a 5'23" twenty-seven inch center, you know, who wants to be a shooting guard. When he should be down low underneath, you know, down in the blocks, throwing the ball up high, catching it up high, and then turning around and just laying it up into the basket. You know, when he's trying to be Steph Curry, there's nothing you can really do. Luka did everything he was supposed to do, but at the end of the day, the role players for the Clippers, Marcus Morris hitting 7 3-point shots.
7 of 9.
I mean, you can't. I mean, that's.
I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr., who's had a great series. So I don't want to dwell on Tim Hardaway Jr. because he has had a great series. But in this closeout game, 1 of 9 from the three-point line.
Unacceptable. Unexcusable.
Kristaps Porzingis, 0 of 5. And he's pulling up on a 3-on-1 fast break and shooting a 3 and bricking it. Like, it's one of those things where it's just inexcusable. It's like, what are you doing? Like, if I was Luka, I would be so pissed. 46 points, 17 of 30 from the field, which is a 54%, or Yeah, what's that? 17 of 30? I'm trying to do quick math in my head. Good field goal percentage, around 60%.
That's great.
14 assists, 7 rebounds.
Again, and what did I say the other day? Luka's going to get his points. You didn't, and he got his assists. He was getting people involved, but there's nothing you can do when your 7'3" center is coming up to break on a 3-on-1 fast break, like you said, pulling up from 30, thinking he's Steph Curry breaking the ball.
And then Kawhi, again, he did his Kawhi game, 28, 10 and 9, 10 of 15 from the field. I mean,
he had a hell of a game Friday night, man. I got to give him that.
And I told you, this is what I said. They're going to, I said, when they were down 3-2, I said, Clippers are going to win. They won the series because they have the closeout guys in Kawhi. They have the better bench. They have the better
than Paul George. Kawhi, I'll give you.
But even Markieff Morris.
Oh, gosh, Markieff.
Even Rajon Rondo, even they didn't play well. Terrence Mann, Luke Kennard. And that was a good play. They went to Kennard and Mann, who were having good games, instead of trying to go to, let's force feed Rondo. No, let's give it to the guys who are hot right now. Let Kennard, let Mann take over. I like that coaching job. It's a closeout game. You can't let people's feelings get hurt. Go with the hot hand.
That's the difference between, you know, someone like Ty Lue, who's a champion coach, versus, you know, the Mavericks head coach. Because you know that your players aren't hidden, especially when you're going 1-for-9, Tim Hardaway, and 0-for-5. You know, you're not sitting them. You're not substituting. I know you want to go with the people who kind of got you there, but you got to win too. I mean, and outside of Luka, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, and yeah, you say he had 40-plus points.
46.
46 and 14 assists. So that means he contributed to at least, at a minimum, 28 points.
Yeah.
If, you know, so, I mean, that's like –
They didn't hit
like,
many threes outside. Dorian Finney-Smith had 4. KP – or Tim Hardaway had 1, and that was it.
That's wow. That's what I'm saying. So,
yeah, that's rough.
So Luka left everything out there on the court, and you know it's funny. His only playoff experience has been against the Clippers. So maybe next year, you know, have different luck.
They're going to be a much better team next year.
Well, we got to see what the makeup is going to be.
Well, but that's why I think there's no chance this team is the same. They're going to at least go out and try and bring in a big name guy. Maybe KP's on the trade block, and they try and trade him for a more legitimate number two. I don't know what his trade value is right now.
That's a good question.
I've heard, like, if you look at, like, basketball Twitter, there's people saying they wouldn't trade him for Jeremy Grant. Like, remember Jeremy Grant, who was, I believe, either a second rounder or undrafted, was with the Sixers, was terrible, then he was with the OKC, got slightly better, and then now he's, like, a very good player with the Pistons.
Yep.
But two very vast different trajectories. Jeremy Grant went from no-name defensive guy to All-star. KP went from all-star, he's going to be the new future face of New York, to what is he? Like, it's crazy the trajectory some guys have taken in the NBA and just how he had everything in front of him. He's kind of just blown it.
The one game that we hadn't talked about that started over the weekend, Milwaukee Bucks, Brooklyn Nets. James Harden left the game injured 1 minute into the ball game. I'm glad he didn't put no money or parlay or anything down because that would have been... I'd have been so pissed at that. Doesn't look like, I think he's ruled out for tonight's game number 2.
Yeah, he's out.
You know, I mean, I have Brooklyn winning. I think you have Milwaukee, right?
I have Milwaukee tonight.
Okay, so
I have Nets winning the series, but I have Milwaukee tonight.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. You know what? I haven't even done who wins the series yet. I've gone game by game.
I thought we did that last week.
No, we did.
I'm pretty sure
we did
the
Sixers
series.
Hawks.
No, I'm pretty sure we did. I'm pretty sure we did the series. I'm pretty sure.
Bleep it, then give me the Bucks. I'll take them.
Okay, I mean, I had the Nets, so it don't matter. I had Nets Lakers, so I mean, I'm not gonna go against my.
Oh, you mean before the season started and stuff?
Well,
yeah,
but see, yeah, but I'm saying, but then, but then when we picked the series last week, I said, even though the Lakers are out, I still had Bucks. I mean, I still had the Lakers against the Nets, so I'm not gonna go.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm going with the Nets.
Then
on the
sure, I'll stick it with the Bucks. I'll stick
it. Yeah, man. Okay. Have the courage of your convictions, man.
That was 4 months ago.
Look at you. Look, man, I've given you opportunities to make changes to your stuff.
No, I'm keeping it. Give me the Bucks.
All right.
No,
I got Nets winning tonight, though. I think for teams to win, I think they're just going to win on their home court. So yeah, I'm going with the Nets in game two.
This is just such a fun matchup between. Now it's kind of 2-on-2. Now it's Kyrie and KD against Chris Middleton and Giannis. The Nets don't have that third superstar. We know the Bucks don't have that third superstar. They have, like, Drew Holiday, who's a very good player. They have Brooke Lopez, Splash Mountain, a very good player. They got good guys. But now it's the two superstars against two superstars. This is going to be very exciting.
I think it comes down to coaching. Coaching and want to. Look. We know what Giannis is going to give. Giannis is going to give you 30 and 12, 30 and 15.
Sure.
Kevin Durant, you know, somebody, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be Kyrie's going to pick up on the assist part. KD's going to pick up on the rebounding part. I just it's a good matchup, man. I mean, there's two games on tonight. Am I correct?
Yeah, we'll get to the second one. Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk the second one, which is the Denver Nuggets at Phoenix. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. The final game. First game in the series tonight between the Denver Nuggets and they are at the Phoenix Suns. Darren, how do you think this is playing out? I mean, the Denver Nuggets, without their second-best player, everyone expected them to kind of fall by the wayside once Jamal Murray got injured. And then the Phoenix Suns, where I think everyone kept waiting for the other shoe to fall, saying, great Cinderella story, they're fun, they're young, outside of Chris Paul, and they're somehow just keep getting it done. How's this playing out?
DeAndre Ayton's gonna have a tough time with Nikola Jokic, man. That's a tough series, man, because I didn't have Phoenix winning, had them beating the Lakers. So I'm gonna go. Man, I don't know, man. That's a tough one. I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going to go with Denver. Denver in six.
Man, I don't know. This one's so tough.
That's what I'm saying. Because, again, we expected the Lakers, yeah, obviously, had they been healthy, to be Phoenix. And then we'll, you know, then they would take on, you know, the Denver. And then, we go from there. So
I want to see game one because I want to, one, see how Devin Booker gets guarded by Denver. And then, two, I want to see if Ayton can either Ayton's going to be able to stop Jokic based on his phenomenal defensive acumen.
You can't stop him.
But if he bites on those head fakes like Yusuf Nurkic was from the Trailblazers, it's over. That's if they bite and he gets Ayton in foul trouble, which he's pretty much does to every center, it's over.
Here's the difference. Jokic is going to bring him out because that's one thing he didn't have to worry about with the Lakers.
It's the pump fakes.
Well, no. I'm saying the fact that he can shoot 3-point shots with ease. So I'm saying that helps because against the Lakers, he didn't have to worry about the big penguin, Andre Drummond, or, you know, and Marcus Gasol didn't have enough playing time to where he really had to worry about going out there outside the key. Well, you've got to defend Jokic all over the floor. Because he can handle the ball, you know. I mean, he can run the offense.
Yeah.
He can shoot from 3 points. So, and he can play down low. So, again, everything's always about matchups. Like you said, game number one. I do want to, you know, because like I said, I think he's going to have a hard time dealing with him, and because he's a foreign player, he's got a little bit more wiggle room. He's got a little bit more upstairs as it relates to basketball IQ, as it relates to Dayton, to where he'll be able to do things on the floor. And plus, because he's going to be the MVP, he's going to get some of those calls even on the road.
He hasn't gotten a lot of calls throughout his career so far. That's been the big upcry from Denver fans. The only reason why I think DeAndre Ayton could have – Ayton's either getting cooked because he's young, inexperienced. He's going to get cooked by some of these moves he may not have seen before. Or because he's so phenomenally athletic and so good. Because he's quick enough to guard Jokic on the outside.
Of course.
I mean, I saw him just drive and cook I want to say it was Andre Drummond in that Lakers series, but I go, that looked like a shooting guard, like his speed, his...
Yeah, but Drummond is slow, too, though.
I agree. Yeah. But I'm just very intrigued to see how this matchup plays, because DeAndre Ayton has grown exponentially ever since he's gotten into the NBA.
Yeah. No, this is I mean, it's a good one, man. This is a good matchup, and these are good problems to have for us tonight.
Dude, this is awesome. NBA playoffs is, like, the best time.
NBA playoff mixed with NFL offseason news and stuff every day.
And with the Royals being actually good, or at least solid, it makes for...
I'll be forgetting all about the Royals. I got to get out to another game.
Dude, they've been solid. And then guess tonight, Jackson Kohar on the mound for the Kansas City Royals, making his Major League debut, which means the top four pitchers drafted by Kansas City in the 2018 draft will have made a start, which is... an MLB record. This is making history tonight with Jackson Kohar taking the mound. Everyone, have fun. Stay safe. This was Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow on Tuesday for the final show of the week on 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We're out of here.